Joining us, professor of Hispanic Studies at Oberlin College, author of the new book, Memory Battles of the Spanish Civil War, History, Fiction, and Photography. Tune in Monday for our holiday special when we speak with Noam Chomsky for the hour. We'll talk about climate change, nuclear weapons, North Korea, Iran, and the Republican Party. He says the Republican Party in the United States today is the most dangerous organization on earth. This is Democracy Now. I am Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. The time now is 8 o'clock, and coming up next is Positively Revolting.
Join me, Lanita Duke, every first and third Friday between 8 p.m. and 10 p.m. on From the Grassroots, where we agitate for social change with music and commentary. Joining me is Professor Diane Johnson and political analysis provided by Landon Crowell. From the Grassroots, every first and third Friday between 8 and 10 p.m. on 90.7 FM, KBOO in Portland.
At KBOO, we think that all communities deserve to be fully informed on the policies and decisions that will impact their lives, and we need your help to make that happen. We're looking for citizen journalists to help collect, report, and broadcast the news. Do you think that there are groups that are underrepresented or marginalized by the mainstream media? Are you aware of social, political, or environmental activities that don't have adequate visibility? Are there important issues in your town or region that aren't getting coverage? This is your chance to give a voice to the voiceless. You don't have to have experience, and you don't have to come into KBOO's Portland studio. You can contribute from wherever you live. If you have some basic writing skills and a desire to get the word out, we want you. Just send an email with your idea and contact information to newsdirector, that's all one word, newsdirector@kboo.fm, and include the words citizen journalist in the subject line, and the news team will contact you. Once again, send that email to newsdirector@kboo.fm.
What would you have instead?
This is it.
And good morning, good morning. It's about 3 minutes after 8 o'clock in the morning, and you are tuned to KBOO Portland, your very own community radio station. I'm Ani.
I'm Lynn.
And together we are Positively Revolting, as ever. We certainly hope you are, too.
And we hope you all had a lovely solstice last night.
That's right. This is the dawn after the solstice. The darkest night leads to new light, right?
Yeah, so, by about February 2nd. Nothing too measurable till then, but
details. Don't
listen to me.
Well, you know, that was the show.
Everyone go back to bed. We'll see you later.
Returning light. And that is actually, you know, this is for those of us who are, you know, in the pagan sort of, you know, myself, neo-Celtic-ish kind of faith, spiral walking, you know, type kind of folk. This is the first dawn after what is the darkest night. Winter solstice traditionally spent meditating, spent visioning, spent drawing forth the ideas that you want to incubate and actually see come into this new year, the new year that starts today according to the you know, more, I want to say, earth-based, astrological-based, astronomically-based natural calendar
natural calendar.
Yeah, that one. This is, in fact, the new year. And so,
not the Roman one.
No. So we ask at this time, what gives us hope as the light returns? What, as we are looking at what we want to bring into that new year, what we want to manifest, what we want to make real around us in this new year, what gives us hope? What keeps us going? What keeps us going through what is a very dark time? That's our question for you, dear listener, this morning. What gives you hope, Lynn?
503-231-8187 for folks to call. What gives me hope?
I was going to say, well, wow, yeah, that number gives you hope, and it gives me hope too. It's,
well,
a connection.
It's fun to have it again. A lot of what gives me hope this year, what has done things for me. Todd Davies has a wonderful women writers of science fiction who have had the genre, their little, the female genre to themselves, because for the most part nobody wanted to pay any attention to them so they could start writing some amazing things. But what I find, granted, Margaret Atwood is not always remotely cheery, but I find women writers to have more of a, and I don't mean a hopeful bent, I'm thinking of Starhawk's The Fifth Sacred Thing. It's not dystopian in the sense that everything is horrible. Things are really horrible in that, but they are really looking for a different way of seeing things. Right now, our traditional forms of many of our traditional forms of protests, of dealing with this incredibly dark blanket of I can't even call it neoconism, of what the Republicans are having their wet dreams about, which is the most putting in the most inequality, making us the most banana republic of all the world. There's new approaches and new thoughts, and literature is one way that people, because we have to change the story. The story is really dark and gloomy right now, and it needs a little work. And one of the things in fact, I was reading it during the election time last year, was Starhawk's The Fifth Sacred Thing, is that people actually tried and succeeded in doing something different. Now, they suffered for it. In Todd Davies' The Arcadia Trilogy, which is another way of, different way of looking at things, death is a character. So it's not that folks won't suffer, but we cannot, there's another article I've been reading about, stop being friendly to the rich. It's on our, I got it from Ross Danny. It's on our Facebook page. Stop being polite to the rich. That's an old aristocratic. Oh, for God's sake, be nice to the upper classes.
Well, it's it goes enforced.
Right away. It's totally enforced.
I mean, I have
it's
to true. Say that's. I mean, you know,
that's true. And this article is a.
If one wasn't polite to the upper
time
classes,
to make
one
life
lost
hard
their head.
For the rich. It's time for polite, respectable, rational people to start saying what has become painfully obvious. It's time to stop respecting the rich and start stealing from them. If that's something you want to do, I can't necessarily condone that.
But you're reading from an article.
I know. I'm reading from an article.
For me, what gives us hope, what gives me hope, is actually seeing people reach out with compassion to each other,
mm-hmm.
which I think gets us through, you know, it's so important to be kind because we can, right?
Yes. We were talking about that on the way in.
Yes, we were. Because it is not something that is, I have to say, kindness has, you know, in many ways gone out of vogue, right? In pop culture, in, you know, you don't want to be that sort of
equated with... I'd say only in media.
It's kind of equated with, you know, being naive, being wimpy, being, you know, a pushover. And yet, I think that it is... really one of the most powerful things one can do is to extend compassion and solidarity and kindness to another person. It changes lives. And that is something that we actually have power over in our own beings. We can choose kindness. And I think that is essential. And I watch that happening more and more as times are getting kind of weird. I'm watching people open up and be kind to each other, and that gives me a lot of hope.
Indeed. I as I was listening to Nikki Haley, who was our ambassador at the UN, give this really stupid bully speech about, well, you people who have voted against whatever. This is, of course, the United States deciding that Jerusalem will be the capital of Israel, which in and of itself is just completely insane. And we're seeing who you are. We are going to, we've seen you when you're sleeping. We know when you're awake. And it reminded me of something I was taught as a kid, and I hope that's still being taught places, is that the bigger you are, the more responsibility you have to be kind and compassionate. That's your responsibility if you are bigger and stronger than other countries. And right now, at the top levels, we don't have that in the United States in a very profound and unsettling way. But I do see people. I see. So I guess one of the things that gives me heart is things coming from the ground up, because we... there's an old phrase, as above, so below, and time to flip that.
As below, so above?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'll ponder that.
Thank you.
I think that, well, I want to get back to what you were saying earlier about feminism and about being visionary. It's good fiction helps us reinvent the world. Right.
Change the story.
Exactly. And so we need to, I think it's interesting that many times good, imaginative, new world, new paradigm fiction is written very often by women. And it's, you know, I want to go back to like Ursula Le Guin and some of her essential works questioning gender, questioning the gender binary, mm-hmm. The Left Hand of Darkness and The Dispossessed. So as we traverse in this world of peril, it is good to read visionary works, I think. And I'd be interested in hearing from our listeners about literature, movies that you find particularly hopeful, that you are able to sort of go, yeah, that's a future world that has elements that I want to make real, that I you know, this is looking like something I want to put into the world we co-create. I'm always looking for new examples of good fiction, especially in the fantasy and science fiction, because I'm kind of nerdly in that way. But alternate reality, how do we build this world? How do we vision it? And what visions are you finding in the world of fiction? 503-231-8187. Call us and join us in the conversation about hope, about the new year, about what you're hoping to see, what gives you hope, and how we do this thing together.
Lori Penny wrote a great article in The Guardian. It was a little while ago, but you can call it up on The Guardian website really easily, and I think we'll probably post it too. And one of the things that she says is that in times of uncertainty, we turn to familiar stories for comfort. I, you know, do stuff like reread Outlander because it makes me feel good, kind of thing. But sometimes the familiar...
I've been rereading Terry Pratchett. There you go.
But sometimes the familiar is inadequate. We need to image other worlds and fast, she says. And I have to agree with that. So what do you do, dear listener? What sort of stuff... We'll just say it again and call in before the end of the show.
Thanks, Lynn.
We'd like to be able to actually talk to you. And sometimes when people call in at 10 minutes to 8, it limits the amount that we can talk. So it's
503-231-8187. Also, you can follow along on Facebook. You can find us there, Positively Revolting. And you can also follow us in the Twitterverse at Positive Revolt. Let's go ahead and talk to Joe. Good morning, Joe.
Good morning, honey. Good morning, Lynn.
Hey, Joe.
Good morning.
Thank you for having this show, as you do every week. I just wanted to comment, to add a couple of things that give me hope.
Yes.
They're not necessarily going to be,
I know what one is.
Yeah. One of them is my son, which was born just last week. And I'm not going to recommend that everyone go out and have a baby because, you know, that's going to destroy the planet. But... But I think that for me, what has been hopeful in this experience is letting something so new into my life that I did not really ever contemplate having before. I was with the person who I've had this baby with, and it has brought a lot of healing in its own way, in ways that I'm still figuring out how did it do that.
Right.
So there's that.
Awesome.
And then I think more beyond myself and my immediate local is what's going on around Portland as we look toward the election of Joanne Hardesty and Julia DeGraw, changing the landscape of this city and the political landscape of this city, also gives me hope, and seeing, you know, the response that their campaigns so far are getting. So those are two things that are giving me hope for now and hopefully through this next year.
Right on. Thank you so much for your call this morning.
Thank you.
Bye. 503-231-8187.
He's up this early because he's not sleeping anymore.
That's right, because that's what a one-week-old baby does.
That's right.
And let's go ahead and talk to Dougie. Good morning, Dougie.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yep.
First, the bad news before I bring up what gives me hope.
Okay.
The bad news is that over 6,000 lobbyists helped craft this tax bill with Donald Trump and the Republican Party, and basically gave the largest tax cut or largest tax shift or money from the poorest and the working class and middle class, and shifted it to the extreme wealthy, the top one percenters who have so much money, it's just completely outrageous as it is before they did this. And I guess the bad news is that what's on the chopping block is people's Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and programs for the poor. But the good news, well, of course, the bad news also is that they also gave up the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge so that they could drill for more oil, the same commodity that right now they have. Right now they already have in oil reserves, enough oil reserves as it is right now to warm the planet 10 degrees Fahrenheit by the end of the century. So that's the bad news. The good news is that millennials now outnumber the baby boomers, and most millennials are, I'd say, social Democrats. They support Bernie Sanders. They're more left-leaning. They're willing to share and have compassion for others. So the hope is that in the very near future, it will demonstrate at the ballot box, and we can get rid of, as Noam Chomsky said, the most dangerous organization on the planet, the Republican Party. And
all
the
right.
good news is, I also seen, I went to go see The Last Jedi. You brought up science fiction.
Yeah.
I always kind of liked the stories of Star Wars, that the resistance, no matter how dark and against the odds, they always seem to pull it together in the end and are able to defeat the Empire. Whether it ever becomes true in reality, I don't know, but I guess the message is to keep hope alive and to never give up.
It's pretty much, you know, really, what's the alternative? Thank you so much, Dougie, for your call this morning.
Merry Christmas and Happy New Year.
And to you. Yeah, really. Keep it on, because what else do we do? It's, you know, I think super important as we look at resistance as sort of a long haul.
It definitely, it's the long haul. And kind of what I think we're trying to say this morning is what gives you hope, something that can give you joy. And because there's a lot of horrible stuff happening at the moment, more than I can ever remember in my lifetime.
And, Fast and furious. It comes at us.
It comes at, yes. Sort of like a lightsaber. So what gives you joy? Because it's really important to have some joy for our DNA, for ourselves, to have some joy in the middle of all of this, and that it can happen. And like we're, so for me, and I think I'm saying that science fiction written by women, feminism right now gives me a lot of hope. The Me Too, I'm watching the, I'm watching the harassers drop one by one by one by one by one every day, and I find that heartening.
Yeah, you know, there's I actually find a lot of hope in the opening that the Me Too hashtag Me Too. Who figured that actually that is going to crack things open?
Well,
after,
when you look back on it,
you know,
think of it, it's a generations. Safe place. It's, women have waited for a safe place.
Okay.
Right?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I don't think we've waited. I mean, I think that we've been truth-telling for years.
True.
I mean, I know, you know, 27 years ago, in the late 80s, early 90s, the Riot Girls, there was a whole lot of truth-telling, a whole lot of silence-breaking as a part of that movement. Women have been doing this for generations. Women have been screaming it from the mountaintops, really, for generations. But here it is catching hold, and that
somehow that
gives
platform
me hope that we have a moment, and I want to use that moment for all it's worth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't trust that it's going to be here forever. I don't trust that the limelight will stay focused on the idea that pervasively as a culture we have green-lighted sexual abuse and rape. That we have curtailed women's options, that we have inculcated the gender norms, the binary gender norms of passivity and aggressor. that, you know, that now that the light is shining on that, I want to really use that. This is the time to make that that crack in the facade of the patriarchy as big as possible. It is the time to try to bring it down. And I find that extremely hopeful.
Mm-hmm.
Yay, I say. Let's go ahead and talk to Harvey. Good morning, Harvey. You're on the air.
Hi, Lynn and Ani, and top of the season to you and the KBOO audience.
And to you.
And to you as well.
Great. Well, you know, I feel that we actually are living in a very interesting time, and it's the merging of science fiction and reality. And over the last couple of weeks, a former Pentagon official who had been recently revealing that the government program to research potential UFOs said Monday he believes there's evidence that UFOs are reaching, alien life is reaching the world, and we're not alone. And John Podesta, who was Clinton's campaign manager, tweeted, "Lift the veil" at the Pentagon expose. So I think that we're seeing the introduction of the possible alien life or extraterrestrial life or interdimensional life onto the planet Earth. And I feel that this is a really important time, and it portends a lot of change because, you know, flying saucers, they don't use fossil fuels. They hover, they speed off, they go.
We don't know what they use.
Right. And so if this is true and if it's happening, and I believe it is happening, the actual they're going to stop the denial now, then we may, you know, there's been several. If you go to UFO websites, they talk about crashed UFOs where the government secretly takes these to their bases and back engineers it. And so maybe a lot of the UFOs in the sky could be government UFOs that use this alien technology to, we have it already, so perhaps this could be the end of fossil fuels and moving toward a new sustainable form of energy.
Well, you have given this some thought.
And there's an author right here in California. His name is Preston Dennett, PrestonDennett. Preston Dennett. He's written over 100 papers and 20 books on UFOs. He's a great guy. In fact, I would recommend that you have him on one of your shows one day. He's a very lighthearted guy, and he talks about all the stuff he's been studying over the years, and he has great books. Yeah, there's also right. YouTubes of him.
Hey, Harvey. Cool. So the idea that we are, in fact, in contact with other beings, other planets, that you find hopeful.
Yes, I think that.
So you're not sort of in the mindset of, oh no, they're coming to, you know, take the planet.
No, I think that the universe is
create
teeming.
The
I think the universe is teeming with life. Planets are islands in the desert,
cool.
And I believe that just as we have the ocean of water, the ocean of air, and the ocean of space, that all three oceans are teeming with life, and I think it's time to open up to that reality.
All right, hey Harvey, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Take care. And you know, Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Mm-hmm.
Said nah. He saw the same video. I read this last night. I found it crushing, personally. He was like, nah, there's really no evidence. I love Neil deGrasse Tyson. Okay, I'm moving on. Laura. Good morning, Laura. You're on the air.
Good morning, Lynn and Ani. Thank you so much for being here. Happy solstice, and I'm grateful for your sanity. I'm grateful that you're here.
We have sanity. Wow, thanks.
Thank you for your vote of confidence.
I'm counting on it.
Oh, dear. Okay, well.
I'm counting on it.
All right.
What about you? So tell us about your hope.
Yes, I have some book recommendations.
Oh, wonderful.
I think visionary fiction, as you said, is most important at this time. And two recent books that I have really found to be wonderful and helpful are Starhawk, City of Refuge.
Yes.
And which Dina Metzger's.
That's the sequel to the fifth sacred thing.
Yes, it's wonderful. It you know, it gives you a way of envisioning a future beyond this time,
mm-hmm.
And it's just so important. And then Dina Metzger's recent book, Reign of Nightbirds. It's a piece of fiction dealing with climate change, more specifically, but beautifully written, very powerful, and I'm about halfway through that. And then third recommendation is Mary Rosenblum's Drylands, which was actually written in the 90s, situated in the 21st century along the Columbia River, and it's so stark and powerful. I think she's from Corvallis. I don't know if that's still true, but locally, that's a must read. It's strong stuff, but it has a hopeful push to it as well. And I just think, you know, women are showing us the way.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate good recommendations for literature, because in fact, I firmly believe that literature, that fiction, that movies help us recreate the world and what we fill our imaginations with, so we create around us. So I think that's super
Absolutely.
Important.
Thank
very much.
You. Bye-bye.
Take care. And 503-231-8187 is the number to call this morning. We're talking about things we find hopeful, what gets us through these rather trying times as we look at...
Now, there's the understatement of the morning.
Yeah, I was raised Brit. as we look at... what gives us hope? The dawn after the solstice, this is the beginning of the new year. As the light starts to return, we turn to each other and ask, how do we get through this darkened time? How do we, in fact, create a more vibrant and joyous life? How do we recreate the world around us so that, in fact, we have a world that is based in egalitarianism, in love, in truth, in beauty, in joy?
You know, and that's part of what this dark time of year is about, to be sitting and contemplating these things, to perhaps stay away from your screen for a little while. Hard to do. Trust me, I'm there with all of you. I, too, am a screen addict. I love it. But to read some books, to think about what would actually... Because there's so much right now about what we don't want floating around. So to take the time to think about what a world that you would actually like to be in... would be to take the time to dare I say, write it down.
Mm-hmm.
Write it on your computer. I don't care about that. It doesn't have to be on paper. But write it down. Think about it. I just, it's to me, it's just more important than ever for people to do that kind of thing right now. And,
and part of that to me is wanting a world that's actually based in something real. In not the hamster wheel of affluenza, the fact that...
Because trust me, you're going to lose that hamster wheel these days.
Well, yeah. Well, I think a lot of people are really in absolute survival mode.
Yeah.
You know, taking on a couple of jobs, working 60, 80-hour weeks, just trying to keep bills paid. And
a place
and
to
not
live.
Right. And not extravagant bills. I'm talking, you know, rent and food. And so it's important to look at movements that support workers. It's important to look at living wages. It's important to look at a minimum wage, like a guaranteed annual income safety net that is actually above poverty levels. And along with that, I would say it's probably really important to look at a maximum wage. How much is enough? And if you need more than enough...
I'm nodding over here.
Is that actually... Is that okay? If you need more than enough. And I'm not talking like, what was that? There was a fellow that had written a book in the 90s about the voluntary simplicity movement. And as somebody who'd grown up poor,
yes,
he was saying that voluntary simplicity to him sounded like a voluntary toothache. Who'd ever wanna? But I'm not talking about being without. I'm talking about having enough, being comfortable. If we all... Actually, we had talked earlier about this tax deal that is a massive redistribution of the wealth.
That's all it is.
It just sucks it straight up.
Yep.
But what if we had that massive redistribution of the wealth and actually spread it out in the country to each and every one of us? We would be having enough, right? And I think that's super important. If you constantly need to acquire more and more and more, you know,
well, capitalism is based on lack. Lack of.
Well, capitalism is based on permanent growth and worker exploitation.
Yes. But people not having enough.
Well, that's working what keeps workers exploited.
Right.
Because otherwise, if you know, you might actually want to shop around for a boss that treats you well.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, where was I going with that? If you require more, when you look at the average person, if somebody keeps acquiring things until they don't have room to move in their house, you realize that that's probably some sign of mental illness. If you're a person who needs to acquire ever more wealth past the point that you could use it, or say your family could use it, wealth past the point of anything except acquiring more wealth, I think that's a sign of mental illness. That is a deep insecurity in and of yourself. And it has far more to do with your own emptiness than anything else, and certainly any kind of healthy economics.
Well, and back to the article that that I got from Ross Denny, that time to make life hard for the rich. And this fellow, I'm sorry, let me get to his name. Hamilton Nolan says it's time for polite, respectable, rational people to start saying what has become painfully obvious. It's time to stop respecting the rich and start stealing from them in earnest. Inequality is eating America alive. It's been growing for decades. To say that the American dream is dead is no longer a poetic exaggeration. It's an accurate description of 40 years of wage stagnation, declining economic mobility that has produced a generation that cannot expect to live better than their parents did. Not because of devastating war or plague, but because of a very specific set of rules governing a very specific economic system that encourages the accumulation of great wealth among a tiny portion of the population to the detriment of the vast majority of people. Our political and business leaders have chosen to embrace a system that favors capital over labor, a system in which the more money, the more you already have, the more you make. And the less you have, the harder it is to build wealth. It's a system designed to increase inequality. It's functioning exactly as designed. And now it's about to get really worse.
Yes.
Yes. So this this guy is saying, how long are people supposed to tolerate being smacked in the face by the rich? And he is talking about things like...
Well, I think... You know,
I don't know. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Okay. I think that when it comes to that and looking at late-stage capitalism...
We are so... How late can it get?
This tax bill actually, on the one hand, it is horrible. It is going to increase the amount of suffering by the middle class and the poor. It devastates social services and the safety nets that we have, very meager, though they have been there. So it's horrible, and I don't want to actually try to put a happy face on it. But because I am the eternal optimist, if I needed to find a silver lining, and God knows I do, I would say that this really underscores the lie, the horror that is late stage capitalism, that this kind of rips the Band-Aid off, and maybe it becomes so naked. Maybe the evils that are capitalism become so completely transparent and obvious and in our faces that people will actually say, we can find a better system. We must find a better system. Maybe that's the silver lining that I'm going to hang on to.
Well, in this article, he does talk about how violence against people is wrong and a bad way to solve problems. But capital is different. One thing that could help create the political environment conductive to solving the inequality problem would be to make the cost of accumulating all the capital too high to be worth it. In other words, to create a downside to being too rich, as you were just talking about. I've personally stood in front of a room, he says, full of hedge fund titans and billionaire investors warning one another explicitly that inequality must be addressed lest the U.S. become a place like Latin America where rich people are forced to live behind walls, surrounded by armed guards, because the very real risk from the rage of the poor. Rich people in this country do not want to live like that. I don't know if I agree with him about that.
I was going to say, it seems like many of them already do.
Yeah. If they,
you know,
see that they must stop
themselves
being
into
so
their own
greedy
biospheres
in order to enjoy their own freedom, they will stop being so greedy. I think maybe that's some people he may know. The Kochs just don't strike me as those that sort of
But
folks.
What do you think, dear listener? Call us.
Yes.
503-231-8187. Also want to encourage you to like us on Facebook, where you can follow along with fascinating articles throughout the week, or you can find us there, Positively Revolting, and like our fan page. You can also follow along in the Twitterverse at Positive Revolt.
What's coming up on KBOO this morning, Ani?
Let me tell you about it. You are listening to KBOO, your community radio station. This is Positively Revolting, talk radio that decries the terrors of the old world as we hold on to each other to create the world anew. That is what we do here on Friday mornings on KBOO. I'm Ani.
I'm Lynn.
And we have coming right up at 9 o'clock, One Land, Many Voices, exploring the social, political, and cultural issues of Palestine and Israel. At 10 o'clock, Valley Views continues the discussion on the concept of maximum income. How much is enough? At 10:15, it's Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. And at 11 o'clock, Pacific Underground, a show for and by Asian and Pacific Islander communities in the Northwest. KBOO is, in fact, your independent source for news and entertainment. All of the above. News you can use and music that is relevant and meaningful. Here we are for you. Please become a member. Just go to kboo.fm and click on donate. So with all that, again, I want to encourage you to call 503-231-8187. Let us know what gives you hope. Let us know what fills you with joy as we have just gotten through the longest night of the year and we are looking at the light returning as we look at this new cycle where we move forward. We have passed the midwinter point and we know that spring is around the corner, just 6 weeks away. How do we hold each other and help each other through what is a dark time, metaphorically and realistically.
Yes.
Good morning, Helen. You are on the air.
Hi. Okay, I have Twitter, and I don't know how I got it, but one of the things that I have is brain pickings. And one from this morning is a reflection on living through turbulent times. This is a most wonderful site. It has all kinds of different articles, like there's one about a book like a grandparent dying, and then there's children and they're named Joy and Despair, all these kinds of things. This is just a great site. Like one of the things is Timeless Advice Writings, the collected wisdom of great writers, and it just goes on and on. So it's really worthwhile looking at it, and it's worthwhile.
Fantastic.
Okay.
Thanks very much for your call this morning.
Another bit from this article is, he says, it's nice to imagine a grand, well-targeted computer hack that would neatly transfer billions of dollars out of the accounts of, oh, say, the Walton family, into a charity account that would disperse the money to the poor in untraceable ways. This seems far-fetched. Realistically, what can people do now is to start thinking about ways to make it uncomfortable to be too rich, socially uncomfortable and otherwise. When the accumulation of great wealth ceases to be a praiseworthy endeavor and instead becomes viewed as a sick, greedy pastime whose only reward is the hatred of your fellow citizens and the inability to live comfortably without fear of your excessive property being destroyed, rich people will rethink their goals, this fellow says. Until then, inequality will keep rising and everything for most people will continue to slowly, slowly, slowly get worse.
Hmm. Interesting food for thought. Let's go ahead and talk to James, shall we?
Yeah.
Good morning, James. You're on the air.
Good morning. You know, one of the things that's really giving me hope is seeing a lot of these young Black, Mexican, Pacific Islander, you know, these young folks who are starting to discover their ancestral traditions and essentially decolonizing themselves mentally, because you know we live in such spiritual subjugation most of the times because we've been colonized by those who were by Christians, and we don't see ourselves in any sort of divine canon generally. And so when we get to look at ourselves in the perspective of how our ancestors lived with the land and, you know, and tended to the spirits and, you know, in our veneration of ancestors, we begin to see ourselves in that divine canon. And it just, that gives me a lot of hope that we can finally smash this Western patriarchy from the inside out.
Absolutely. I think that it is essential to decolonize our lives, everyone. We have all been colonized, and it is so important to see through that. It is so important to actually see ourselves, as you were saying, as, you know, part of a chain, venerating our ancestors, knowing that they have laid groundwork before us, and knowing that we are here, the ancestors of future generations, and that we are caretaking this place for them. Right.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think the other thing, too, is when you realize how we fit into the divine canon and the veneration of our ancestors, we can start to realize all these fake lines that have been drawn, especially the lines of racism, because this didn't start before colonization. And so we can see how we can better come together and find what we can, instead of feeling like we have to kind of piggyback off somebody else's traditions, that we can all find something within ourselves that we can bring to the table, you know, people of any color, and actually really come together without those fake lines that have been drawn for us.
Super, super good. Thank you so much for your call this morning.
Thank you. Have a great day.
You
Thanks,
too.
Thanks, James. That's good to hear.
503-231-8187. Excellent.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go ahead and talk to William. Good morning, William. You're on the air.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for hearing me. I have a simple question that I encourage we, the people of planet Earth, to engage in. And here's the question. Is there a better system than money and finance for managing human affairs? See, if you consider that on the one hand, we have a space-age, super-productive technology, and on the other hand, we manage it with a system, money and finance, that is so many thousands of years old that we literally do not know when money was invented. And that very simple question...
I think we do know when money was invented, but that's... But I'm not sure that finance is certainly the way to...
What's your idea?
Yeah.
Well, in the research that I've done, the first people that I've been able to determine engaged in this question and proposed a different system was in 1918. 99 years ago, there was a group of scientists, technicians, and engineers that recognized that because of the technical leaps that we had made primarily in America from our Civil War to 1918, they said we're shifting from a condition where we're always struggling to produce enough for a growing population. They said we're now starting to produce more than enough for a growing population, so we're shifting from relative scarcity to relative abundance. They said money is only good in a condition of scarcity. They proposed a system based on energy, the availability of energy.
But when you say we're producing more than enough, who are you talking about, the we?
Well, on planet Earth...
That's the planet we're on, but who's the we? Like, I mean, are you talking about, say, people in this country? Are you talking about the Earth as a whole, in which case there's some distribution issues we should probably mention? Absolutely. Are you talking about what?
I'm talking about Earth as a whole. So, for example, in food, we produce enough food for every human being on this planet, and we have for approximately 100 years.
Mm-hmm.
But we do have a huge distribution problem. And you have never I would submit that you have never read a news report that said it is impossible to produce enough automobiles for all the people on planet Earth who want them, or it is impossible to produce enough shelter for all the people on planet Earth, or it's impossible to produce enough cell phones for everybody. That is not the problem. The problem is that we have a system that produces scarcity in the midst of abundance. That's why in this country, and actually lots of other countries, we have things called agricultural price support. The only way a price support can work is you must suppress the supply. Yep. For example, you pay farmers not to produce crops in order to maintain the price or maintain the system. So in every area of life, we either do produce enough right now or we can produce enough. But we have a system that perpetuates scarcity.
I have a couple of issues, I think, with what you're saying. But overall, I agree that we do have a system that perpetuates scarcity. That's true. The distribution of our resources is seriously faulted, or faulty, I should say. That said, the idea that one can produce items for every, you know, for all 6 billion of us, 7 billion, have we gotten to 7 million yet?
7.5 billion at the moment.
Then there's, I actually do have issues with that, because if we created, you know, cell phones for everyone, and we pretty much have, cars for everyone, then we're actually using the finite resources of this planet in ways that are not particularly sustainable.
And that's an issue. I agree totally. But we would discover that we are overproducing many things, and
sure,
we are producing things that we don't need. In particular, let's just consider the military for a moment.
I don't think we need the military, so we could just cut to the chase.
Yeah.
Exactly. Consider all the humans that are engaged in the brain power that's going towards killing each other, all the energy and all
the material. Thinking about money, all the money that's going.
Well, that's why I encourage us to drop the conversation about money, because okay, that's not, we invented money.
See, yes, absolutely.
I have another simple question.
No, it's given totally true.
Given that we invented, if you can see that we invented money,
sure,
and if you can therefore see that every tiny detail about how money works is totally in control of human beings, it does not
sure
follow the laws of mathematics.
No, of course.
Here's my question. Why don't we produce more money than we need rather than less money than we need?
Money is sort of a fiction, actually. I mean, if we want to get into my personal philosophy, money means nothing. It is a fiction. It is there that we have created it.
Melody, my old
partner on the show, used to talk about how money stands in for trust. We used to just have sort of a more direct, you know, smaller village relationship with each other. I need this, you need that. We understand we are in this relationship. We will mutually act to benefit each other. No money needs to be exchanged. And that's the way it has been in many societies around the planet for a long time. That said, other societies, most of us have produced money. And yeah, it started maybe about 5,000, 7,000 years ago. It is man-made, as is capitalism, as is every other economic system. So let's find one that works better for the most of us.
I would say the economic management system is what we create. See, if we
all right, I'm, thanks very much.
Thanks. We're in the weeds,
but we're looking for what gives us hope. And I'm feeling like we're in the weeds of an economics discussion.
Can I say one more thing?
Does it give you hope?
To me, the economic news has never been better for humanity.
Right on. There you go.
The economic opportunity is stunning.
Don't have any idea what you mean by that, actually.
But I'm stunned.
The opportunity to provide a high standard and quality of life for every human being without destroying the planet in the process. If you're at all familiar with the work of Buckminster Fuller, I worked with Bucky Fuller briefly, studied his work extensively.
Cool.
Yes, I'm very familiar with his work.
That was his entire point of his life.
Yeah.
Was to work for the success of all humanity, and he pointed out that it is relatively easy to produce that for all humanity if we change our outlook.
Cool. Thanks very much for your call this morning.
Thank you, too. Happy holidays.
You, too. Changing our outlook is essential.
Indeed.
Therein we find agreement.
Mm-hmm.
Economic systems are man-made. Yes. Let's go ahead and think about ways to restructure our society wherein we actually do support each other and our lives, where we do look at the sustainability. I have serious issues when it comes to saying everyone can live like kings, because in fact we cannot. That it is important to look at our relationships with each other and with the planet and with our finite resources, and that everyone have enough.
Yeah, yeah. And I remember, this reminds me of an old science fiction television show that I'm blanking on the name of right now. Rod Serling.
Twilight Zone.
So these folks stole all this gold, and they put themselves in chambers so they would not wake up for like 200 years so they could get away with the gold heist. Well, by the time they... and can you imagine what someone's breath is like after 200 years of being in the cryogenic chamber? But I won't go there.
Thanks, Lynn.
You're welcome. That just always was... But what happened is, after they woke up, they found that money... People were no longer using money. They were no longer using gold.
Uh-huh.
So this whole... that, as a child, affected me in a way that, yeah, it's just a system. Which is what Rod Serling was saying, that using gold as your standard, using money as the way to go, is simply a mindset.
Indeed. Couldn't agree more. It's but again, that as a whole leaves me a little on the cold side. It's, you know, we could talk about economics for a long time, but talking about economics is important in a way, but it also, I think, when we start looking at the solution, unless that economics seriously takes into consideration human relationships and the resources of the earth, then it's a flawed system, and it is not sustainable.
It's called what we got.
It's yes,
pretty much. No,
yes. Yeah, that is kind of it. But again, where I get some joy and where I get some hope is looking at people really valuing connections with each other.
Yeah.
Over materialism. I'm seeing that more and more. And maybe that's a direct result of people having less access to some cash. I don't know. But I am seeing that as a trend. And I think that that's super hopeful. I think that resistance is, I'm very hopeful about the fact that people are waking up in large numbers. Now, how we bring people together, that's tricky, because we are all at sort of different levels of awakening, of consciousness, of realizing that the system that we're in is not okay, that it's been a scam for a long time.
That's another lovely understatement.
You know, right.
Not okay.
It's not okay. So how do we reach out, and how do we educate each other? How do we bring people together and get us sort of more or less on the same page without squashing folks, without saying, my God, I can't believe you didn't know that. I've been screaming this forever. It's all about, you know, because that's true, and that needs to be heard as well.
Yeah.
And we have to make sure that we are ever and always inviting more people into the party that is resistance.
And not to worry, folks, there is plenty to do.
The continuous party
mm-hmm.
of resistance.
Mm-hmm.
And with that, like Sands for the Hourglass, look at that, it's an hour. I am going to let you know that again at 9 o'clock, One Land, Many Voices will be heard exploring the social, political, and cultural issues of Palestine and Israel. At 10 o'clock, Valley Views, continuing the discussion on the concept of maximum income. How much is enough? Relevant, I think,
to today's
discussion. At 10:15, Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. And at 11 o'clock, The Pacific Underground, a show for and by Asian and Pacific Islander communities in the Northwest. And with that, we have been Positively Revolting.
Thanks for listening.
Like us on Facebook. You can find us there, Positively Revolting. On the Twitterverse, we are Positive Revolt. We will be back next week, and so will you. Take care.
KBOO is in this year's Willamette Week Give Guide. KBOO has inspired and supported communities for nearly 50 years. You were an important part of this work, and your gift to KBOO builds fiercely just, creative, and independent radio. Join your friends and neighbors in supporting KBOO in the Give Guide. It's easy and secure. Help us make our $18,000 goal before December 31st. Go to the giveguide.org website and find KBOO in the Creative Expression section. And as always, thank you for your support of KBOO.
Join me, Lanita Duke, every first and third Friday between 8 p.m. and 10 p.m. on From the Grassroots, where we agitate for social change with music and commentary. Joining me is Professor Diane Johnson and political analysis provided by Landon Crowell. From the Grassroots, every first and third Friday between 8 and 10 p.m. on 90.7 FM, KBOO in Portland.
And this is KBOO Portland. It's 9:00.